What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bridget.
And this is Girls Next Level.
Welcome back to Girls Next Level, everybody. How was your weekend?
Good morrow, good lady. My weekend was great. I was working on my book.
Oh, how's it going?
It's going. Like, I turned the first four chapters in, and they were really excited about them.
Oh,
so
good.
That's exciting. And I was working on chapter five all weekend. I felt like, even though I'd already written it like a while ago, going back over it, I kind of felt like things were a little redundant and maybe slightly out of order. And I am being so anal about the chronology because
as
the books,
you should be.
Yeah, the books that we've gone through are just so bad chronologically. And so I am like
the worst.
Every detail, like every little event, like what day was Golden Globes in 2002? And I'm like looking it up and stuff so that I can like make sure that everything is in order. Now, there's probably something that I'm going to miss or whatever, but I am trying so hard to make sure that everything is like, boom. I was like even calling you, what day did you cut your hair in 2002? Please tell me it was in March.
Yeah, because it's frustrating. Like, as you know, on the Patreon, we did a whole series where we went through Crystal's book and it just like doesn't make sense. Whole era at the mansion. It's just like you're bopping from one year to the next. And it's like, what's happening here? It's just like she put stuff where she thought it was convenient for her story, not what really happened.
Right. And for me, I mean, who knows? Later on, they may tell me that chronological isn't the best way to tell the story or something. But for me right now, chronologically is like exactly how I'm telling this story.
100%, it's the way to tell the story, especially when you're telling like a factual story. And I'm not saying people will say this about your story as much, but like with mine, like I knew it was going to be picked apart to death and there are going to be people coming out saying I was lying and stuff. So you have to have everything like lined up.
Yeah. Well, I know people are going to pick it apart to death because we're picking other people apart to death. So I know it's just part of writing a book and putting yourself out there and stuff. But so far, the first four chapters, I've gotten really positive feedback from them. So I'm excited about that.
That's good.
They kind of want chapter five before we move forward because honestly, the first four chapters, I'm not even at the mansion yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've tested, I've gone to a party and stuff like that, but I'm not like there yet and stuff. And in chapter five, I'm finally there.
Yeah.
So they want that chapter to kind of move forward with now. So, I've been working on that all weekend.
Can I be a prude mom for a second?
Yes.
Somebody was rolling around Vegas the other day.
Rolling?
In a car.
Oh, okay.
With a sign in their window that said, I love my butt plug, and a picture of a butt plug.
That's weird. It's weird. That's just weird because
it's weird. And my kids saw it and they're like laughing and dying and they're like, what's a butt plug? I'm like, I guess somebody just really had diarrhea. Like, I didn't know what else to say about it.
No, that's a cute way to say it.
Yeah. But sometimes there's just shit rolling around that you're like, how do I explain that to the kids? My favorite example, and this was before I had kids, but it was when I first moved to Vegas. There was a van rolling around town that was painted advertising their wares for the anal ring toss girls. With a very graphic drawing of what an anal ring toss girl is.
Was it pink?
No, I think it, I mean, I could be wrong. I'll try and look up a picture and put it on here. But I think it was a green van. And there was also like a crazy psycho clown on there too with like the rings. And there was a naked woman, a drawing of a naked woman bent over with a stick coming out of her ass and a look on her face like she's getting fucked. And it just said, I think it actually what it said was booty ring toss girl, but just as bad.
I feel like I remember seeing that too. I mean, it's like truck nuts.
It's worse than truck
nuts. It is worse than truck nuts, but it's like that. It's just like, why are you advertising this shit? Like,
how are you supposed to explain that to your kids when there's a giant cartoon of an anal ring toss girl running around?
Well, as a kid, I feel like I would have thought that was the thing that you saw, the anal plug thing or butt plug thing or whatever. I would have thought that was hella funny.
Me too. Anal ring toss girl. Like, I could see how as a kid I would have thought that was funny too. But when you see a stick coming out of someone's ass, that, like, how would you interpret that as a kid? That could be like painful. That could be like what even is that?
I think,
is she impaled? Is she pooping out a stick? Like, how would your mind?
I think as a kid, I would think that it wasn't in her butt. It was like she was trying to hold it in her cheeks. Like, that's what I would think.
Hopefully,
as a kid.
Yeah.
And like, oh my God, how would you do that? You
right.
know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure that's what I would think was happening. I wouldn't think that it was like in her.
Yeah.
Cause I wouldn't even know if that was something that anybody would do.
Yeah.
Or could be done.
Right.
So I would be like, but I feel like how you explain to them, even though it's not the truth, I feel like it's a good way to like say what an anal plug.
Like it just clogs up the diarrhea.
Yeah, like so you can go to work or something.
Yeah.
So you can still go to school that day. Let's just like put this in there and make sure there's no accident. But then they're going to get sick. And they're going to be like, Mom, I need a butt plug.
Right?
I got to go to school today.
Yeah.
You're like, no, it only works in adults.
So funny. I told you about this, but I got the weirdest thing. There was like a fan edit on TikTok of like me in an Easter dress from a Girls Next Door episode. And I went to go leave hearts on the comments. And I saw in the comments, this girl wrote, I will never forget that anytime I see her, I think of how my aunt was on the show and said that she was hella mean. And I'm thinking, who was your aunt? Because not that many people were on the show. And if somebody came through the mansion, like in the Mean Girls era, and said I was hella mean, I would think they just came through and I didn't really talk to them and they thought I was stuck up, you know, because whatever, I'm quiet. But during the Girls Next Door era, like I always made a real effort to be like welcoming to people, especially like the new playmates and stuff. And there weren't very many people on our show. Although when I was first thinking this, I was thinking, well, does something like a cattle call count? Like that episode where all the girls who were trying out to be bunnies on the show, does that count as like being on the show? I don't know.
When you texted me, my mind was so into the Renaissance Fair episode because that's the one I was just reviewing and like getting ready for and stuff. And I was like, was it somebody from the Renaissance Fair? Like, did we run into somebody? Did somebody pull out your chair and you didn't acknowledge or something? Like, what happened?
Right. Like,
who could this be?
And we talked to a lot of people still who were on the show, and there weren't very many of people who were on the show in a substantial way. And I'm thinking, what girl is somebody's aunt who's being two-faced and saying I'm hella mean behind my back? You know what I mean? And I'm trying to think of what it was. And then people were responding to her and going, oh, well, I think Holly was going through a hard time at the mansion, blah, blah, blah. And she wrote back, she goes, the girl who wrote originally, she goes, yeah, I guess they were just all competitive with each other. She said the other girls were really nice, meaning you and Kendra, I assume. So I wrote back to her. I come out, I go, wait, who was your aunt? And she answers back and she goes, oh, she came to the bunny search for the Palms casino dealer. She was the one in like, I forget what it was, like a green top or a blue top that said Vegas is awesome.
Well, first of all, let me just interject and say that we were not just out meeting girls without the cameras on us. So that entire interaction with every single person that interacted with us is on camera.
So what could any of us have done that was hella mean with the cameras on us?
Right.
And then I remember when we reviewed that episode, we didn't like how it was cut because they would cut to from us talking to a girl. And then they would cut to like a private convo we were having with the HR guy where we're like, well, and I can tell we're all being careful because we're on camera. We don't want to say anything really mean, but they cut it to where like a girl will come up and we'll be like, yeah, I don't really know about her. Like as if we're saying it right in front of her or something like that. And so I thought, well, maybe that happened. So I went back, rewatched that part.
Oh, really?
And it wasn't even a cut like that. So I don't know what I could have done at this table.
In front of everybody and on
camera. In front of the camera, where we were having a 5-minute interaction where I was hella mean and nobody else was.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
And it sucks if she really felt that way. Like, I feel bad if I accidentally made somebody feel that way. So I'm sorry if that's the case. But I don't know what it could have been.
I don't either.
And especially
sitting with you that entire day.
Like, I get it if she thought, like, maybe if I was, like, not as, if I was checked out and not as involved in her interview, maybe I wasn't asking her as many questions as everybody else was or whatever. Maybe she thought I was, like, disconnected or didn't feel a connection with me or something. But to describe somebody as hella mean, and it's just a reminder to, like, don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
But back to happier times. So we are talking about the Renaissance Fair episode.
Surely you joust.
I know, which I'm excited about because I love this episode. It's super fun. And we just did two episodes that I wasn't that crazy about. So I'm happy to get into a fun episode again where everybody's all together and we're doing something fun. And this is more of like an iconic, memorable episode, whereas the other two really weren't. This episode, Grotto Time Machine Alert, first aired on August 26th, 2007. The top movies were Superbad, The Bourne Ultimatum, and Mr. Bean's Holiday.
I remember watching The Bourne Ultimatum at the mansion.
Yeah, I've never seen Mr. Bean's Holiday.
No.
The top song was still Beautiful Girls by Sean Kingston.
Wow.
That one is just hanging on. So I would always hear you and Stacy talking about going to the Renaissance Fair during my time at the mansion. How many years had you guys been going up to this point?
Ever since I met her, I think, and became tight with her. So probably 2003 on, but I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if we were able to go each time or not from there on, but probably, because that would only be four times. But my past with the Renaissance Fair goes way before that. Mm-hmm. So my aunt, in fact, it's the aunt that you met that came and helped
the cookout.
Yes, my aunt Jane. So the Renaissance Fair used to be in Northern California, too, at this amazing location. It was in Novato, and it was out in this, like, forest, like, on the hillside with trees.
Cool.
I think it was called, like the Black Forest or something, too.
Ooh.
And so it was an amazing location. Like, it was so – you really, really felt like you just entered this Renaissance village. There was no modern amenities to be found.
Wow.
And it was incredible.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
So she used to work for the Living History Center, which actually put these on. And so, of course, she would work in, and she's always done group ticket sales. That's what she does. Mm-hmm. And so she worked for the Living History Center for group ticket sales. And so at the Ren Fair, she would work the front if you had will call tickets that you already purchased and stuff. And we would go every year to go visit her and stuff. And then when I became old enough to get a job, she was like, you should come work at the Ren Fair. And so I did. And it's really cool what they do, too. You do like a whole weekend of workshops where you take the Elizabethan language course and you learn all about the costuming and what things mean and the different colors mean and different, you know, categories of people and everything. And then you learn like about the history of what's going on. There's so many different classes you pick and choose. Like there's certain ones you have to take in order to start working there, but there are a whole bunch to take. So it was really, really cool to like do this whole retreat and do all the different workshops and everything. Fun. And I loved it. And I loved it so much. And then, of course, when I moved to LA, I wasn't part of it anymore until I met Stacy. Mm-hmm. And then I found out that there was one in LA and she was somebody to go with and stuff. So we started going again and it was really fun.
That's fun. Did I ever tell you about the location in Texas where Pascual would have a medieval festival?
No.
That's a really long no.
Well, because there is a Renaissance fair in Texas that is like really, really popular.
Is it the one outside Houston?
I think so.
Because he would throw a festival called Middlelands that was like a rave, but it was medieval themed. And it was so fucking cool. And it was on the grounds where they had this Renaissance fair, but there were permanent buildings set up. So there's like a medieval village and like a big mead hall. And that stuff was already there. And it's like very woodsy and like kind of out in the country and stuff like where you would want to have a festival. But it was like the setup was already there for this like medieval village. It was so cool.
It's the same one I'm thinking of. It just wasn't
a festival.
The fair time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was so cool. Because I know people that go religiously every year and they always send pictures and they're like, you have to come to the Texas one. It's amazing and stuff. So when I started going to the LA one, and when we first started going, I was like, oh, it's here, because the one in NorCal was such an incredible, like a magical location. Probably it sounds sort of like this Texas one. And like it was unbelievable. And so when I came to LA, it's at like a park where like there's a like a little lake and people are having picnics and and so it's not, and there's like restrooms and stuff.
It doesn't have that immersive feel.
Yeah. And I mean, it does once you're in there and you like put a blinders on to the rest of the stuff going on. When the one in Northern California, you would drive down this dirt road and park way out in this dirt,
so
like
really
parking
immersed
lot.
Yeah, that's how the Texas one is.
Yeah, it just really felt cool. And by the way, that one doesn't even exist anymore either. Somebody bought that property and they were, I remember when this was happening, they were like begging and fighting against it. Don't do it. Don't do it. But they sold that property and they made it into like a golf course and like a high-end community.
Wah, wah. I know. Gentrification at its worst.
Really sad, because it really was. It was perfect.
You know what you'd like? This isn't as extreme as like an out in the middle of nowhere Renaissance festival setting, but in Shanghai Disneyland, their Fantasyland there kind of reminds me of a Renaissance fair a little bit. Because you know how the Fantasylands and the Disney park are like all buildings and, you know, obviously like concrete and, you know, very like crowded little villages, European villages. But the Shanghai Disney Fantasyland is like a lot of grassy spaces and it's very big and open. And then you'll see like Rapunzel's like Snuggly Duckling Tavern popped up over here. And it feels very Renaissance fairish because you're just like strolling through the grass kind of.
Oh,
it's interesting.
Cute.
You like that one. If you were Queen Elizabeth I, could you have ever imagined that people over in your colonies are like doing this festival with you on the cover, like 500 years later? I mean, it's probably the goal. Like, I think those people were probably pretty into like shrines to themselves, but
yeah, but you know, I don't think they would have had any idea that we would be like doing this whole fair.
Yeah.
Interpreting their time.
Yeah, their specific time.
Yeah.
So this episode opens up. It's a perfect day at the mansion. Yes. There's sunshine. There's birds chirping. And then it's another season 3 episode that starts off in Mary's office.
Yes.
This is really an opening home for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole episode is a little unique to me because we talk about all the time how much Hef loved this show and how into it he was. But I feel like this episode specifically, he's super into it. He's super into participating to the point where they even set up this fake scene at the beginning where he gets invited with this like letter from the queen to the Renaissance fair. Yes. And you can just tell he is into it. And I think it's extra surprising to me because I'm shocked he even wanted to go to this. It's so outside his comfort zone.
I am too. Because I think that when I first suggested it, I thought all of us girls would go. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I would love for him to come, but I don't think I ever thought that Hef would go.
And he says in this episode that he's been to a Renaissance fair before, and I wonder which one it was and what time period that was. I'm picturing it like a Barbie Benton era thing, but I don't really know. That's just like where my mind goes.
I feel like it definitely was probably back in the 70s. And the Ren Fair has been going on a long time. They've been doing this for a while. I don't have the history and all the dates and everything, but I just know that it's been going on.
Well, in that book, I'm with the band, Pamela DeBar writes about going to the Renaissance Fair in the 60s. And back then it was in Calabasas.
I bet it was like, so rural there.
There was nothing in Calabasas. Did you know Calabasas is named after pumpkins?
No. What do you mean?
It comes from the Spanish word for pumpkin. But the story is there was this big wagon full of pumpkins, you know, back in the day when they were first like settling the town. And the wagon like spilled over and there were pumpkins all through the main road or whatever. And they were just, there's this big mess of pumpkins. So they just named the town after it.
Oh.
Isn't that cute?
Maybe Calabasas is my town after all then.
And now they have Knights of the Jack there with all the carved pumpkins.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of out there, though. That's way out at King Gillette Ranch or whatever it's called.
That place is so haunted.
I think so, too.
It is. Like, Ghost Adventures did an episode there. And when Zach came back from it, he broke up with me out of nowhere. I got awakened by something weird in my room that night. I don't know if I was having a nightmare or what.
From the Gillette Ranch?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been out there?
I didn't go.
I've been out there for Night of the Jacks.
No, I've been to Knights of the Jack, but I haven't been like and explored the ranch.
Oh, no. Is he talking the buildings are haunted? Because there's some old buildings.
Yeah,
on there,
he went like in the buildings and stuff.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I've never been in any of those.
So buildings. I think of that every time I pass the sign because to go out to Malibu, there's the signs for King Gillette Ranch. And I'm like,
Yeah. Yeah, so this whole scene, he gets this special invitation from the queen and reads it out loud, is a total setup. And one thing I want to make clear in this whole episode, I talk a lot about, in commentary especially, not getting credit for this episode. And when you watch it, I'm getting tons of credit for the episode. And that's not even what I'm talking about, though. But I wanted to make it clear right now because even me watching it going, what am I talking about? I'm getting lots of credit. But I do know what I was talking about. Holly gives me tons of credit. Kendra gives me tons of credit. Everybody gives me credit in the episode except the episode itself.
Yeah, they come up with this fake, because obviously it's your idea to go. It's your idea. You pitched the idea for the episode to Kevin. But they act like the Renaissance Fair on their own came up with this idea, like, you know who we really need to come this year? Sir Hugh Hefner. So I'm going to have the queen write a letter on parchment paper and send it to the office, which that all was manufactured for the show. After you came up with the idea to go and they got like the fair's cooperation and everything. So it's like Kevin didn't mind giving you credit when it came to us talking about it in the episode. So you get credit for being like the first person to go and maybe the person to bring it up, but he can't give you credit for pitching it as an episode idea. It's like
he can't. And producing it, basically. I mean, not that I'm out there producing it, but like I came up with all of the things, as you'll see, I'll explain it too, that go with it and stuff, like coming up with the entire episode.
Because he can't hand that over. And I think there's two reasons for that. One is ego. Like he never wants to share the creative with anybody else. Like he was a big regurgitator. You'd tell him a great idea and he'd be like, ha, 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 no. And then 2 days later, I know, and spit out your same idea. And so there's ego involved. But I think the other thing, too, is back then there was this weird idea that like if a reality show wasn't 100% real and organic, it wasn't good. And obviously the audience understands now that there's a ton of like production involved in reality TV shows and it's not really real reality. But Kevin used to be on the e-message boards defending the show, even to the point where he blasted to everybody that we weren't getting paid during the first season, which was so embarrassing to us. But he had to let everybody know we're not even being paid. That's how real it is. Like, real, real, real. It's like he was so defensive about perpetuating the lie that everything was real, because it wasn't, like, back then considered a good reality show if it wasn't real.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, because he has this ego as a storyteller. So you'd think he'd want the credit for, like, coming up with everything and orchestrating everything. But that wasn't accepted back then. Back then, people wanted to feel like they were true voyeurs, and it had to be a real reality show. Like, nothing could be fake or that would be bad.
Well, the real truth of all of this is, hey, there's this thing that I go to every year. I used to work at it. My aunt works at it every year, still did to that day, was working that day we were there. And Stacey and I go to it every year still. And I really want you guys to experience this. I really want everybody to come with me. That would have been the real truth of all of this. And then I would have not been complaining about not getting credit the whole time.
Yeah.
If that were the initiation of this whole episode.
Totally.
But instead, it comes from a letter from the queen, which I think is cute.
It is a cute device. And it makes Hef look more important. Like, he's this in-demand celebrity doing appearances.
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged thing. So I get what you're saying. Like, you see the value in its cuteness and the fun of it. But
yeah.
But we're here to let you know now how it really came about.
Yeah.
And even the letter is kind of written in this old English-y sounding language and stuff.
I wonder who wrote this. I'm curious. Did they really
Probably Molly Shock.
That's what I'm thinking too, because I was going to say, did they really have somebody from the fair send this letter?
I don't think so.
Even the queen?
Chime in, whoever whatever producer wrote that letter.
Yeah, I think it was a producer that wrote it.
Yeah.
I don't even think the Renaissance Fair knew that there was such a thing going on.
And then my favorite absurdity of this whole scene is after he reads the letter, I'll talk to the girls, as if we didn't already know this was happening. And it wasn't even your idea. And then Mary says something like asking him if he went, and he goes, I went to one a long time ago. And they cut to this funny Renaissance painting with Hef's head superimposed and his voiceover going, very good. And it's kind of funny, because when you think about somebody who's just so much older than everybody in the room and everybody watching, and he says a long time ago, you know, it could have been.
He was there. He knew Queen Elizabeth.
Right. And then they have some odd music leading up to your bedroom.
Was it odd? Were they trying to be like...
I didn't write a note of what my impression of the music was. I almost want to say it was like gongs or meditation bowls or something. It's like not a music you hear on this show very often.
Weird.
And they cut into your room with the cutest shot of Wednesday wearing these giant goggle, like Jackie O sunglasses.
Yes.
And it's just like, there's just visuals in this show that I love. Like last week, it was Crystal Camden covering her face with the Playboy bunny pillow. This is another one. There's just like these absurd visuals that I love so much.
Yeah, so those are Stacey's sunglasses. She's petting Winnie. And I'm telling Stacey I have to talk to her about Ren Faire because I'm so excited because I want her to come with us. And she's talking about how excited she is. She's ready for mead. And if you don't know, mead is like a ale type thing that they serve there.
And then you list what you like about the Renaissance Fair, and they show all kinds of B-roll.
Did you notice I look weird in that scene too? Like I look like done up, but like overly done. But like my hair's in braids and my hair is kind of like bubbly on top.
Uh-huh.
And I have like my makeup to the T. It just doesn't look like a look that I would just be sitting in my room for. So I obviously shot something earlier that day.
Yeah, I wonder what else is going on.
I don't know. We would have been done with calendar by then.
Hmm.
It could have been anything. I was looking. Yeah. We were doing so much press around this time too. So it could have been any of those things. But yeah, I'm definitely all done up.
Coincidentally, when I sat down to review this episode and make the notes, I had the night before taken my kids to Tournament of Kings at Excalibur in Vegas.
Oh my gosh.
So when they show the B-roll and you guys are going, huzzah, like that's what you have to do at the Tournament of Kings, be like, huzzah. So I was already like in the mood.
Yes. And in an interview, I talked to Stacey about that this is one of the things that we bonded over, like when we found out we both love the Renaissance Fair.
Mm-hmm. And then the next scene is the costumers are driving up to the mansion, and you had arranged for a costume company to come and bring up like rental costumes. But I'm surprised you didn't do more of like a custom ahead of time thing, because you are so into the Renaissance Fair and we are so into doing that.
You know what? I think it's because I already had a Ren Faire costume that I used every year. So I think I was just going to wear the one that I always wore. But the reason that I was doing these different things. So a couple of reasons here. So I wanted to make this a complete episode. Like there's so many things that we can add to this to enrich it. And one of the things is I was going back to the workshops that I used to do. So like language classes and having costumes. But also it was super important to me that everybody had that, because I've been to the Renaissance Fair before as just a civilian, like in plain clothes and not playing the part. And it is not fun.
Oh,
I didn't think anyway. Like you feel out of place. They use you to make fun of because you're in this weird clothes to them, you know, and like it's just not as fun. And when you go dressed up and at least if you know just like a few words to get by, then it makes it just so much fun, because then there's really almost no difference between you and the other actors there.
Yeah.
Like everybody's playing the part and you just feel more immersed and like way fun. So I didn't want you guys to go for your first time and not at least be dressed and know some words.
Yeah.
Plus, it made for really good episodes of a build-up to this show. So I was like, oh my God, there's so many things that we can do to like have extra scenes to build this up. And the costuming and the language stuff were part of that. So yeah, the two people come with the racks of clothing. They put a doorbell ring in. Was there an actual ding-dong of a doorbell?
At the mansion?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but it's like ding dong and I answer the door.
That is so funny.
And they make it look like they're pushing something. But I was like, was there a doorbell?
I don't remember a doorbell. And I feel like if there would have been a doorbell at the mansion, it would have had like some kind of a cool sound. It would have been piped into like the organ or something like that. It wouldn't have been just like ding dong. Who the fuck is going to hear that? No.
Maybe the butlers, but I don't think it existed, because people would be hitting it all the time who didn't know better.
Yeah, there would be obnoxious people from parties and stuff.
Oh, parties too. But I mean, even people like I remember my first time at the mansion, like you don't know if you just walk in the door or if you knock or is there a doorbell. Like people would be hitting it all the time, not knowing. And that would just be annoying.
If you don't swing, don't ring.
Yeah.
So hip hop music plays and Kendra comes down and she first looks at this bloomers outfit, parachute pants.
Yeah, because I thought that one would be perfect for her. And she like scoffs, can't stand it. But I thought it was a cool outfit. Like I loved it. Like I was contemplating wearing that because it was so different than anything I'd ever worn.
That's the one that's like a cool blue color, right? Like a dark blue.
It's what she ends up wearing. Yeah. But like we don't know that yet. Oh, can I just say too, I'm in my yellow terry tracksuit and I loved it.
I love those terry cloth tracksuits.
Yeah, it was it was like a lot, very light yellow. And then I also had like the baby pink one. And I had a like kind of baby blue, Tiffany blue kind of color one. Oh, I loved those.
Me too. They were good. And you and Kendra are just like undressing in the bathroom and the dining room. And I feel like this stands out. It shouldn't stand out as weird in this series because we're undressing constantly for the first couple seasons. And I'm undressing later in the vanity. But I feel like it's been a minute since you've had any like nude undressing scenes on this show.
Well, I was thinking about that too when I was watching it. And I'm thinking, but I stay in my bra and underwear the whole time. Like I don't expose anything. And to me, a bra and underwear is like a bathing suit.
Yeah.
Like no big deal. And I was changing right there in the dining room in front of the people. Like I didn't care at all. Kendra was in the bathroom, but that bathroom is pretty small. So there wasn't, I mean, we could have both fit in there, but are you laughing about the toilet?
Okay, you guys. So if you're not on our Patreon, and this was a while back, like 6 months to a year ago, I forget how long ago it was. My sister randomly sent me a picture that she took of the bathroom that was off of the Great Hall in the mansion. Because she just thought I'd be interested in it for whatever. And it's like a flash picture, so everything looks a slightly grittier than in real life. And I posted it to the Patreon just because I know people are interested in like every nook and cranny of the house. And you rarely get to see all these little side places. Like you never see the phone room on the show.
Yeah.
I think the only time you've seen that bathroom off the Great Hall was during the rabbit season episode. I'm in there for a split second in my bunny costume. So I just thought it was interesting. And you guys, the reactions, like if you could pin a post on Patreon to the top, I would pin this one just for fun because I was reading your guys' comments.
I think we might be able to do that.
And I don't know if I really want to pin it though, because people, new members might be like, really, this is what they have to offer. But you guys, the comments on this photo that you guys left were so funny. I was laughing my ass off so hard. Like I couldn't breathe. Just the reactions you guys were having to this bathroom and what a like meth lab it looked like. And the comments you guys were leaving was so fucking funny. And I can't think of that bathroom without thinking of that now.
I can't either. But there's part of me that feels bad about it because I feel like the picture looks worse than what it actually looked like.
Yeah, it's definitely a little exaggerated because of the flash and stuff. But they do have some good points.
There's definitely good points on there. But also, just to defend my point, it's a marble toilet. And so it like gets stained that because it's a natural porous stone. So I'm not trying to totally defend it or anything like that, but I do feel like it got a worse rap than it deserves.
I think I know what you mean because it's like there was housekeeping every day, so it was cleaner than it looked. It wasn't like you walked in there and there was like nasty shit everywhere.
Right.
Was it unkempt in some ways? Like, was there, like, it kind of grosses me out. Like, who goes to an upscale home and there's like the Glade toilet spray like sitting on the back of the toilet?
Yeah.
Or like a pile of tampons just cascading down the top. Like, there's stuff like that. But it wasn't like, it's not like you walked in and it's like it hadn't been mopped that day. You know what I mean?
Or cleaned recently.
Yeah,
It didn't look like it, but it had been. So it was still clean. And people were like, go to Home Depot and get a $20 toilet seat or whatever. But it wasn't that simple.
You had to have a custom-made toilet seat. But you know what, though? I lobbied for Hef to get a new toilet seat specifically on that for a long time because they had the toilet seat that was probably from 1971
probably,
when they first bought the house. And it was just like chipped and weird and it took a long time for them to get a new toilet seat, but it's because you have to like custom make one and like hand paint it to like match the rest of the toilet and stuff like that.
So like I get what everybody's saying and it is funny, but then there's another part of me that's like, well, this is not exactly a true representation and this looks way worse than what it was and stuff. But
I can't,
of all the emotions.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head exactly what the comments said, but some of them were so fucking funny.
They were just dying.
So did you want the blue outfit? And then Kendra at the last minute was like, I want it.
Well, I thought Kendra should have the blue outfit. Mm-hmm. I thought that was perfect for her. But when she didn't want it, I was like, well, I at least want to try it on because this is cool. And it's like nothing I've ever worn before. I probably wouldn't have gotten it because I love being like having the peasant dress and everything. And so I at least wanted to try it on. And then I go in and try it on. And of course, it's amazing. And she's like, wait, that is hot.
Yeah,
I want to try that on. Yeah. I mean, the first thing she comes out in is something that's very piratey. And it's interesting to me how many people dress piratey for the Ren Fair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's whatever.
Well, back then, especially, like, pirates were in. And pirates were sexually fetishized. Like, people were fucking into pirates.
Yeah. Remember the guy who played the pirate at Pirates of the Caribbean in Disneyland?
Brandon? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they have another guy there now who really looks like Johnny Depp. Like, it is crazy.
Well, everybody really thought he looked like Johnny Depp.
Yeah, and they had to take him away because women were getting too crazy with him. So they just, like, didn't use him anymore.
We had a picture. We did, like, a group picture with him one time when we went there. And he messaged me not that long ago, like...
Right, on social media. No, I think we posted it. And he's like, oh, that's me. Or, oh, that's my friend. Da, 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 da.
He's like, hey, could you send me that photo?
Yeah.
So I sent it to him. But yeah.
I think he was like dating or married a girl who played Ariel at the park.
That's so cute.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
Pirate and the Mermaid.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Do you remember the Peter Pan who became Tumblr famous?
No.
There was a guy who played Peter Pan who was like famous on Tumblr. I want to say he came to Peep Show. And he was one of the people who I met after who was like, I'm friends with Peter Pan. And even though I was always like a huge Disney adult, I didn't know that the employees are supposed to say I'm friends with that character instead of I played that character. And I had like a handful of people come up to me at meet and greet and say, I'm friends with Minnie Mouse. And I would be like, oh, cool. Because I didn't know what they meant. I thought they like had lost their shit.
So that means they are Minnie Mouse.
Or
right?
used or to Peter work Pan. As. Yeah. Even people who don't work there anymore, they're supposed to say, oh, I was friends with Alice in Wonderland instead of I was Alice in Wonderland or I worked as Alice in Wonderland.
That's
but I didn't know that at the time. And I thought all these people were just like way too into it. I was like,
you're like, whoa. Well, I mean, I think in this whole scene, like Kendra goes through these different outfits. She comes out in one that's very pirate-like and she likes it. But then she sees the blue on me and she really likes that one a lot. So, and I'm like, I told you, like, try this one on, like, wear it. Like, I was totally cool with her having that costume and I felt like it was best for her. But yeah, the pirate thing is kind of interesting. But I'm glad she went with the blue.
Mm-hmm.
It looked good.
I remember at the time when pirates were like super in, that was the same time that Treasure Island in Vegas like rebranded to TI and like took away as much of the pirate stuff as they could. I was like, what are they doing? They need to like make that like a sexualized pirate resort and it would be really popular.
Yeah.
Because that was the time to do it. It was like the mid early 2000s. Like people were like into fucking pirates.
Right.
So the next scene is me walking into trashy lingerie, which gives me chills because we just did on our Patreon a couple weeks ago a true crime episode where we talk a little bit about what just happened.
Yeah.
At the trashy lingerie.
Yeah.
Or behind the trashy lingerie.
And Bridget, a different Bridget, is there waiting for you. Bridget did PR for Trashy. Mm-hmm.
So she always stepped in and was like the facsimile of whoever we were actually working with.
Yeah, because you guys, I think we've said this before, but the actual designers and the actual salespeople did not want to be on camera at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd always send Bridget in to do all the scenes. And she knew what she was talking about, but she wasn't like all in on the details or whatever. So she'd be like, yeah, so I think this looks good.
Yeah.
I think they did this and stuff.
So I'm wearing a white juicy short set and my hair is done like Marie Antoinette. And the reason why is because I'm going there to film the fitting. But what I'm doing right after it is because they came out with a whole line of Marie Antoinette stuff after I did my birthday party. And I was modeling for Trashy.com.
I was thinking, geez, did she do this scene all the way back in December before, on her day of her birthday?
That's what I thought, too. When I rewatched this for YouTube, I was like, damn, this is like
old,
exactly.
Yeah.
But I looked into it and I looked at my calendar and stuff, and it was because I was modeling for them right after. Like, because we shot it all upstairs at Trashy, and we did that. Do you remember way back in the day on the old Trashy Lingerie website, like when we were there? They've changed it since then. But you used to be able to shop by model.
Yes.
They
and
would
the
have
model
a list
was supposedly
of all the
get
models.
A little kickback.
Yeah. So they would have, you could either shop by category or theme or color or whatever. We could also shop by model. And a lot of the models were like Dita Von Teese or Masumi Max, people like that. And you could like click on their picture and like you could shop everything they modeled.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. Okay. You know what's weird? And I don't want to make anybody out there who's asked feel bad about asking, but I've had more than one person slide into my DMs asking to borrow my Marie Antoinette outfit.
People you know are...
No!
Okay, no, that's weird.
It's weird to me, too, because it's like... That's like asking to borrow somebody's wedding dress, almost. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of, like, the most iconic things I wore in the show. Like, the most memorable things.
Yeah, that and
like,
the peacock.
My favorite outfit. Like, why am I going to send that away to somebody I don't know to get ruined and probably not sent back? Like, not trying to make you feel bad for asking, but I'm like, really? That's weird.
Yeah. And it's a no.
It's a no. Yeah.
It's a no. I'm going to tell you right now. That's a no. Yeah. Especially for you and I, because we love all the stuff that we wore so much. And it's one thing if it's somebody we know and trust,
mm-hmm.
like borrowing each other's stuff or whatever.
I still wouldn't let anybody borrow the Marie Antoinette because it like drags on the floor in the back. And it's like if anybody wore that anywhere, it would just get dirty and nasty. And yeah, I feel like I've explained this too when I've done like archive tours on my YouTube and stuff. Like when I was at the mansion, like, it was a lot of miserable times, and the clothes were sometimes the only way I had to really express myself, or one of the few, like, refuges I had that was, like, fun for me.
Yeah.
So it holds a whole different layer. Like, some people look at it and you're like, oh, if that time was so traumatic, why do you keep the stuff? But that's not what it was. Like, this was, like, a niche thing that, like, kept me sane during that time. You know what I mean? It was, like, one of the few ways I felt like I could control what I looked like, or control what I was communicating to other people, or had any autonomy over what I got to choose for myself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah. And we just put a lot of time and thought and our own creativity. Those are, like, our personal designs.
Yeah. Like, it was one of the few outlets we had to, like, be creative and express ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a Sleeping Beauty costume made for the Renaissance Fair, and I was excited to have an excuse to have a whole Sleeping Beauty outfit made. I love Disney princess costumes. And I've wore it quite a few times since this too, because I've wore it to, like, Halloween at Disneyland and stuff like that. And there was this picture. It was, like, some paparazzi candid photo that somebody took of me at Disneyland during Halloween in that outfit. And it was being passed around online for a while, accompanying this article that kept popping up. And the headline was, "Fire Disney Employees Reveal All."
And it's you?
Yeah, and I've never worked for Disney or anything, so I thought it was funny.
That's so funny.
It was, like, one of those BuzzFeed type of articles.
Well, I just want to say, too, I thought that outfit turned out incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I love everything about it. One thing they did that I wish I would have altered before we filmed this is they put stuffing in, like, the trim that's around the waist. Oh. And I've since taken it out so it lies flat. But the stuffing kind of makes it, like, puff up weird. And I wish I would have, like, taken the stuffing out before we filmed this. But whatever.
Oh, in commentary here, you say that you need to be every Disney princess at some point. Have you done it?
No, but honestly, I've lost interest in some of them because some of the Disney princesses they've come out with lately, I'm like, she's wearing pants.
Oh.
I don't care. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then there's some that, like, I wouldn't do. Like, I can't obviously be Pocahontas or Mulan.
Oh,
or
yeah, yeah.
Anything like that. But probably, like, the ones that I would dress up as, I've probably done at some point, like Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty. I've never done Ariel because I'd want to do it in, like, a really cool way and just haven't had the occasion. That's my thing now, is niche Disney characters. Like, when me and Trisha and Tana did, like, the three blondes from Beauty and the Beast, mm-hmm. like, nobody ever dresses up as those ones. So, but I've done, like, Rapunzel and Elsa and, like, all the ones. So I've probably done all the ones I would do.
Yeah.
I do feel like working as a Disney character is the one thing I missed out on in my life that I didn't do. But I begged Kevin to use, like, the Sleeping Beauty ballet music at the Trashy Lingerie.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the same, it's public domain because it's, like, a Tchaikovsky ballet from way back in the day. But they use that music in the Disney movie. So you, and obviously you can't use, like, Disney music on The Girls Next Door, but I like that we could play this, and it was kind of a workaround, and it's the same music in the Disney movie. So,
yeah.
And I lobbied him. I'm like, you have to use this. You have to use it. You can. It's public domain. Please do it. And he did it because he actually is a huge Sleeping Beauty fan, specifically because it was the first color movie he ever went to. And he had all the Sleeping Beauty memorabilia. He gave me a bunch of it.
Aww.
I have, like, 12 sheet posters and, like, the old, like, puppets from the 50s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he was super into Sleeping Beauty. So he liked the idea of doing that too. So we had fun with that. And the skirt, they did such a good job on this outfit. Like, the skirt even moves when I'm twirling around, the way it moves on the movie.
Yes.
Like, it's just, it's so spot on.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's why I'm saying they did such a good job on this costume. It was, mm-hmm. like, amazing.
Yeah.
I think one of the things you say, and I was thinking it too, the only thing it doesn't do is turn blue.
I know that. I was going to say, that's my next thing, is I need to figure out how to do that. They've come up with some cool things, though. Like, recently at the parks for one of the parades, they had a dress, and it's just the way the fabric is woven. Like, when you turn, it kind of changes.
Oh.
I'm not going to wear my Sleeping Beauty dress because it's, like, so uncomfortable and corsety and stuff. But what I'm going to wear when we film the second half of this is this random dress I found at Macy's, and it kind of has a similar effect. So I can show you. It's not as good as the one they had at the Disney parks, but it's, like, the way it's woven, it's like if you turn one way, it's kind of blue, and turn another way, it's kind of pink. So
that's cool. Yeah. I was thinking too, with, like, LED lights, you might be able to do it now, like, do
right.
like a white dress and then, like, have it pink, and then, like, push a button and then change the
yeah color. Like, remember that, I think it was a Zac Posen dress, I could be wrong on the designer, but Claire Danes wore it to the Met Gala. And it was kind of like Cinderella shape, but it, like, lit up.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next scene is Hef comes down. And like you said at the beginning, like the fact that he's even going to dress up
in a costume
is like, I'm fainting all over again.
Like, I'm so glad he was able to have fun with this, but I am shocked.
I am too.
He got into a costume and they actually did a really good job. I don't know if they pre-selected the one thing they thought he was going to choose, but they did a great job picking something that's kind of like robe-ish and kind of like silky a little bit and kind of looks like something he would wear.
And easy to wear.
Yeah.
I think that's key, too. Something that's easy for him.
And he puts it on and he says, I don't think I would go into a gay bar in this, though. What does that mean?
I have that in here, too. I was going to ask you, what does that mean?
Does it mean it's so sexy that the gays couldn't resist and would be fondling all over him? Does it mean it's too easy access? Does it mean, what does it mean?
I don't know.
Does it mean like it's so kind of like hanging that you're just ready to disrobe? Does he think that's something a gay person wears?
That's what I was just going to say. I feel like he thinks that's something that a gay person would wear. And I'm thinking, what gay people? What?
I know.
Who is wearing that?
I know.
Who? Nobody.
I can picture like an old gay rocking one of those, like a Palm Springs gay just like hanging around his like amazing mid-century house.
Don't you think that's who he was probably thinking of?
Probably.
I don't know. It was weird to me. And I have it in my notes too. Like, what does he mean by this? And it's crazy. It's crazy because I feel like it doesn't even make sense. And I don't understand what the joke, or I don't even know if it's a joke, what he's trying to say here.
It's like, I get it, but I don't. You know what I mean?
I don't get it at all. It doesn't feel like anything that somebody that was gay would wear. But then what is something that somebody was gay would wear? Like, what is that even?
Well, I don't think people like we know of our generation that are gay would wear that. But I feel like it's like he's picturing like an old Palm Springs gay who's just like lounging around in his backyard with his dick out.
I'm trying to think like a Truman Capote or a
Merv Griffin. I don't even know what Merv Griffin looks like, but
wait, Merv Griffin was gay?
Either that or I've been reading too many blind items.
Why? I thought he was married.
Well, a lot of them were.
No, I did not know he was gay at all.
Again, I could be reading too many blind items. I don't know.
The talk show host guy from back in the day?
Who produced all those shows? Let me look
at
it.
Yeah, he did. He produced like a million
things. Let's see what ChatGPT has to say about this. Not ChatGPT outing people. Okay. Is he alive? Is sort of right, Rose or is?
I thought he died.
Okay.
But I don't know. Now I'm second guessing everything I know or thought I knew.
Merv Griffin never publicly identified as gay during his lifetime. However, there has been speculation about his sexuality, and some people who knew him personally have suggested that he was gay but chose to keep it private. In a 2005 New York Times interview, he sidestepped the topic by saying, I tell everybody that I'm a quarter sexual. I will do anything with anybody for a quarter. He's witty. I like it.
What was he a
talk show? Was romantic. Romantically linked to women and briefly married to Julianne Wright, with whom he had a son. There were also rumors about relationships with men. Next topic.
Yeah, okay. So then car pulls up the driveway and a woman gets out. I answer the door and it's our language coach, Morgan.
She reminds me of Betty Page.
Oh, really?
Her haircut, and she kind of, like, she's not as old as, like, the Betty Page we knew, but.
Oh, Betty Page. Well, I don't know why when you said that I was thinking Betty White.
Oh!
I was like,
no, she reminds me of Betty Page.
Oh, Betty Page, I can see, yeah.
Now, she's a dialect coach. Do you think she does this full-time, or is this a side hustle? Because how much employment is out there for an old English dialect coach?
My guess is that those workshops I told you I took, my guess is that she probably works those workshops.
Yeah.
But she's very good at it. So I wouldn't be surprised if she like worked also like in a college setting and did like, I don't know. But I don't know what her, most of these people, this is not their full-time job.
Yeah, that makes
sense. Something they do on the side or for fun or whatever. So I don't know where they found her.
Have you ever seen those things on TikTok where it'll talk you through what the English language sounded like from like 1,000 years ago. And they're repeating the same sentence over and over, but it starts out like 1,000 years ago. And you'll see on screen, they'll show like illustrations of the time period and the date. And you'll hear the same sentence over and over, and it sounds unintelligible, like you would never recognize what they're saying or understand what they're saying until you get to the Shakespearean era. And that's when you can start to understand it. And it sounds pretty, I mean, small changes, but it sounds pretty much the same up to today. And I wonder, like, is Shakespeare like a linchpin that like keeps things standard? Because it's something that's studied so often. Because obviously the English language has evolved a lot since then. But has it evolved less than it would have because Shakespeare is still such a mainstay that's still so studied?
Whoa, we're getting really deep now.
Yeah, I think he's holding shit together for us, honestly.
Know. I've never thought about this.
Yeah. Start showing me, if you're listening, phone, start showing me those TikToks again so I can send you one. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I've never...
I'll sit and watch the same one on repeat because it's just crazy how you cannot understand the English language from 1,000 years ago.
That's so interesting. No, I have never seen those. But I don't know why it's reminding me of this. Have you seen... I think I've sent you one of them. Have you seen those, like... it's not TikTok, but it's on... And maybe it's on TikTok, too, but it's an Instagram reel where they take like Julius Caesar and they make him come to life real. With AI.
Yeah, some of those are really good.
And Cleopatra.
Yeah.
And I am like captivated by those.
Me too. It's like what we need.
Like I am like, I believe that's what they would have looked like.
Yeah, some of them are really good.
Yeah, and I'm like, wow. And they like come to life and they smile. Mm-hmm. And like, you're like, oh my God, that's what it would have looked like to have met him.
Totally.
Or her, or whatever. Yeah. They're so crazy. I love them. Okay.
So nuts. I used to think it would be cool in college if you could like major in Shakespeare, but not just like, but it would be like an amalgam of like drama and history and English literature and like costume design, like all those things. And I don't know, maybe you can major in Shakespeare somewhere like that, but not that I knew of.
At the Ren Faire.
Yeah.
You got to go to the Ren Faire. You could take your workshops, all of those things.
Did Stacey ever say if she can join us next week?
Stacey is joining us next episode. So
oh, good. I'm excited.
That's going to be fun.
We love
for us.
Having Stacey here.
So that's when we'll go over like the words and the all our itinerary and
our actual
and everything.
Experiences at the Ren Faire.
Yeah. So we left off talking to Morgan and we'll get into that because there's so much to talk about in that episode, yeah. That scene.
A lot happening in that scene. So we'll see you guys next week. If you want more content, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/girlsnextlevel. Check out our merch at girlsnextlevel.shop. And we'll see you guys next week.
Huzzah!
Huzzah! Bye.